It is 24 minutes after the hour on a therapeutic Thursday, and joining us now from a highway traveling north, somewhere from Virginia to Maryland, is Pastor Robbie Pruitt. And thankfully, Pastor Dean Schultz is at the wheel, so we know that they'll be in the right lane at the right time. And Pastors, good morning to both of you. How are things so far? You got bright sunshine. I can see right through the sunroof there. Hey, that's nice.
Oh, it's beautiful. Thanks for having us on. Good to be with you and David on the Broken Road, Jim. Thanks for having us on, and good to be with Pastor Dean Schultz as well from Worship Quippers.
That's a name. Go ahead.
And John Stone Street even had an introduction to your presentation today. He said that he talked about the church staying in its own lane.
Hey, and I hope he does stay in his own lane while we're on the radio here. He's got the seat warmers on, I can tell you that. It feels like somebody let the devil out.
Ooh, he's got a car with seat warmers? Oh, man.
Yeah, I'm putting on the dog today, you know. I'm trying to impress Pastor Rob.
Wife lends you the car, eh?
Yes, but I think I impressed him finally.
Your wife let you have the car, huh?
That's right. You don't make it push it. We run out of gas. We're on the broken road, Route 15.
It is his wife's car. Just Highway 15.
Okay. Hey, Robbie, you're gonna have to use the mic on your cell phone. I know, probably a little closer so we can hear, because we got an important topic to cover, and we'll give it our best shot here. The woman at the well. This is the my question. When we keep bringing up the Chosen, the series. Now, in the Chosen, Jesus comes south to Samaria and meets the woman at the well. In the Bible, to me, he's on his way north, on his way to Capernaum, when he encounters the woman at the well, and he sends his disciples away, which in itself is significant. And there's the fact that in John 4, he says he sent his disciples away to get food. Was there a reason for that? That he wanted to be alone, maybe?
I think so. And it adds a little bit to the scandal of the story. And I actually don't believe what most people believe about this account. Neither does Dr. Eli with Israel Bible Study, that says that this woman is not necessarily a woman of ill repute. We just know that she has had five husbands, and the one that she's living with is not her husband. But the fact that Jesus is meeting this woman in the daytime, and that a Jewish man is approaching a woman in the first place to have a conversation, is in itself scandalous.
Well, wait a second now. Jesus was there first. She approached him. And as some would have it, she went in the middle of the day because her peer group had rejected her. In other words, normally women go fetch water in the morning and then again late in the day. She's there at midday. Did she have an ulterior motive?
Well, again, I don't believe so. I mean, the line, come meet a man who told me everything I've ever done, that line can actually be translated, come meet a man who's told me everything that's ever happened to me.
Mm-hmm.
So you could interpret this as that she is a sinful woman, and certainly she is. We are all sinful people. But in this particular account, her wording is such that it appears that she has had a hard life, and it's not necessarily all her fault here. And again, why would this town receive her rejoicefully and pursue this lead? She's the first evangelist to the Samaritan people, and I think that's the whole point of Jesus's visit.
And maybe it's not important what her background was, really. I mean, it's part of the story. But what's more important is the exchange between she and Jesus.
Exactly. The exchange is extremely important because, number one, you have, in the cultural context, you have the conflict between Jews and Samaritans. So that is prominent in the story. And also, you've got a geographical context of where do you worship. Your fathers worship in Jerusalem, Mount Zion, the Temple Mount. Our people worship on this mountain, and that's Mount Gerizim, right across from Mount Ebal. There are two mountain ridges there. And Moses had actually told Joshua to build an altar and it was built at Mount Ebal. The Samaritan people moved it to Gerizim, but the Samaritans are coming from the intermarriage and intermixing of the Jews and the Assyrians during the Assyrian attack and siege of the north in 722 BC.
As I understand that, the Assyrians brought in people from elsewhere after they exiled some number of Jews from the area. And so they were treated as non-Jews. But still, and correct me if I'm wrong, both the Jews and the Samaritans by this time expected a savior, a Messiah.
Absolutely. So the Jewish people are looking and anticipating the Messiah, as are the Samaritans. The Samaritans are looked down upon by the Jews because they're mixed-blooded. And I would just cite, John the Baptist's words, do not say that you have Abraham as your father, for I tell you from these very stones, as Jesus' words, actually, I can make children of Abraham. So when Jesus comes, he radically seeks out the Gentile and even the Samaritan and even the Syrophoenician woman, that he says, shall I give the children's bread to the dogs? I mean, you've got this tongue-in-cheek interaction. But Jews and Samaritans are like oil and water. They don't mix. They're worshiping on two separate mountains. The woman references this, and she even references the Jew-Samaritan conflict when she says, you, being a Jew, ask me for a drink, a Samaritan woman. So you've got male-female interactions in the context. You've got Jew-Samaritan interactions in the context. You've got geographical context at work here with Mount Zion, and I would argue Mount Ebal and Gerizim. I think even Mount Ebal is stupid because your father's worship on that mountain could actually be referenced not only to Mount Ebal and Moses's instruction to Joshua to build an altar there.
Did the Jews consider the Samaritans to be Gentiles, or were they on some level of their own?
Oh, they're worse than Gentiles. They're mixed breeds. I mean, they're, God, I thank you that I'm not a woman. God, I thank you that I'm not a Gentile. God, I thank you I'm not a Samaritan, and or that I'm not a Roman, or even worse, a Roman Samaritan woman. the Jews had kind of tiers of the social circle and who was the worst or the worst of the worst.
Mm-hmm. Now, I view this story, especially when the disciples return, that they may have been stunned to see them together there. Is that legitimate?
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, because it's socially, unacceptable in a sense. Father Dean, you have any insights into that as well?
No, not really anything to add. One of the things I should mention, we were just at the Bible Museum just about a week ago, and they have an excellent, excellent presentation on the Samaritans that really brings a lot of their culture to life and so forth. But I think the disciples were stunned, and I think that the Lord had a lot to teach them through this encounter, his love and his compassion for this precious lady, and just wanting to really reach out to her and minister to her. And I think it was a real teaching opportunity, as everything our Lord did. He was always teaching the disciples in these wonderful ways, and they were, catching it.
Well, you say wonderful ways. He shook them up time after time after time.
Yeah. Well, it's kind of that's one of the signs and wonders, He shook them up for sure. What are you doing?
Yeah, I'm not sure that
shaking
we get
the sketch.
I'm not sure that we see the intensity of those events from our Western point of view.
Yeah, this is scandalous on so many levels. I don't think, I'm with Wave Nunley, Dr. Wave Nunley from Jerusalem University College, JUC, down by the Jaffa Gate in Israel. He has said that Jews often travel through Samaria. It's quicker. And so there was almost a double standard. Some of the religious Jews, or those who didn't have a reason to travel through Samaria, might not travel through Samaria. But oftentimes, and most of the time, it's a direct route. It's easier to travel through Samaria, because if you don't travel through Samaria, you're coming from the Galilee region to Jerusalem, or from Jerusalem to the Galilee region, you're talking about 100 miles. You would have to go down the Jericho Road.
It more than doubles the time. And Doug Greenwald makes a good presentation on that. He says because that round up the Jordan River Valley is too long to be done between Sabbaths.
That's right.
And you can't travel on the Sabbath.
Mm-hmm. We're on the road, on the broken road here. Mm-hmm. Pastor Dean said earlier, if it's called Broken Road Radio, we got to at least do one show on the road.
That's right.
Well, we found one there. You got to get that fixed.
Well, yeah, so it does. It messes up the time because you got to go down the Jericho Road, cross over the Jordan River, travel the eastern pathway, crossing back over the Jordan River into Galilee if you're coming from Jerusalem to Galilee. I do believe you're right, Jim, that Jesus is traveling from the south because it says that he's just talked to the Pharisees who are having this conversation about those who are being baptized. That Jesus, it says, therefore, when the Lord knew that the Pharisees had heard that Jesus made and baptized more disciples than John, though Jesus himself did not baptize his disciples, he left Judea, that's the south, and departed again into Galilee. So the text in verse 3 tells us where he is and where he's going.
Wouldn't the Jews have considered that well a sacred or at least a historic spot as well?
Well, yeah, I mean, you hear that in the text as well. This is, are you greater? The woman asked Jesus, are you greater than our father Jacob, who gave us this well?
Yeah, we're getting a lot of breakup on the audio now. So
you see that in verse 5, actually. So he came to the city.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, this is all in John chapter 4.
Near the plot of ground, yeah, that Jacob gave to his son Joseph. Now Jacob's well was there. And so Jesus, wearied as he is from his journey, he sat by the well, and it's the sixth hour, and then the woman of Samaria came to draw water. So Jesus is there first, but Jesus approaches her. Verse 7 says that Jesus said to her, give me a drink. So again, while he's there first, he approaches her first, or he begins the conversation.
Correct. Yeah, I missed that part.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Well, that also suggests he knew that was going to happen. He was there intentionally for that reason.
Absolutely. And so this is scandalous. And if you don't understand an honor-shame society, if you don't understand the roles of women and men in the first century culture, you'll miss the scandal here of a man talking to a woman, number one, a Jewish man talking to a Samaritan woman, number two, this idea that Jesus is socially engaging a woman by himself at a well at this time of day. And again, you're correct, Jim, because women would come in a cooler time of the day, so she's coming in the heat of the day, which does imply that potentially she's hiding who she is. Dr. Wimley from JUC, and I quote him a lot here because I tend to agree with him, says that women go to the well just about all the time.
Well, there could be all
waters would go there.
We're talking about a specific event on a specific day. There could be 100 reasons why that happened. But we make assumptions because we know that Jesus often touched lepers, walked among the poor, taught the poor, the downtrodden, the left out, I'm going to say the lower class, the rejected class in Israel. So this would be typical of him to pick someone who had a really tough life and was really down. So that we kind of make those assumptions, I think. Listen, I know we're starting to lose audio, and you're on the road. I hate to be this distraction to you. I mean, it would be terrible if next week we got you from the hospital. You know, it just wouldn't want to do that.
Indeed.
Before we go, I'd like to ask you a question that is kind of more general in nature. And Pastor Dean, this is for you too. I had a interesting conversation with my own minister last night, and he talked about the prodigal son. And I talked to him afterwards, and I said, I'd like to hear a sermon sometime about the other son, about the older son, because the parable starts out, a man had two sons. And I was surprised that he knew as much context about the story as he did. I mean, he was very, very much up on the story of the, you know, the, what the younger or the older son was doing, and what his attitude would have been, and what the father did when he ran to see the son, his younger son, come home. And I guess I'm wondering, my minister doesn't get involved in these contextual things in his sermons. Do you guys?
Yeah, absolutely. Absolutely. I'll let Pastor Dean speak to that as well.
Yeah, I think it's really important to make to look at context, but then also to make the applications to our own culture. And, you know, you think about the prodigal son, you know, rehearsing the speech that he was going to give to his father. And when the father embraces him, the father doesn't want to hear his speech. He just embraces him in an unconditional way and gives him symbols of rings and robes and sandals. All of those were in their cultural context. He was honoring the son. And he was undeserving, just like we are undeserving, where, you know, we need God's mercy, but he expresses that in such a beautiful way. And then also just the wounding that the older son had, perhaps some father wounds of his own, because he was slaving to please the father, and he was, of course, jealous over the affection the father was showing to the son. So there's just so many applications to our culture today. It's just that's the scriptures are so alive and wonderful and relevant to right now by way of application.
Interesting question, because that's kind of the reverse side of the coin. Knowing the context well is kind of useless if you can't apply the message to us in the here and now. So, yeah, that's important. Well, we're grateful to both of you. Stay on the highway and stay safe. Stay in your lane, guys.
We're going to keep it between the lines, guys. Yeah. And speaking of between the lines, we got a new email newsletter out of Preserving Bible Times. Your folks can check that out. We at Preserving Bible Times don't ask what a passage means to us until we first ask what did it mean to its original hearers. So that's what we're talking about, how the cultural context of the day applies to our culture today and how the scripture can have its transformative impact by understanding the text in its original context.
And of course, Robbie, the executive director of Preserving Bible Times, their website, preservingbibletimes.org, marvelous new streaming resources there. There are things for free that you can just enjoy and learn from without any kind of transaction, except you're there to do it. Or you can click on some things, take a look at some ebooks and streaming video that you can purchase and you can receive instantly because it's streaming. And we're in the process.
And a new podcast.
Yeah, podcast now too on all around. Amazon Music and Spotify multiple places. So keep an eye out for those podcasts. Robbie, again, thank you, Pastor Dean. Thank you very much. Be safe, and we'll talk to you next week, Robbie. And Pastor Dean, you're welcome anytime.
Oh, thanks so much. It's a joy to be with you, brothers.
Bye bye.
Thanks for having us on the Broken Road. Take care, guys.
Thanks, guys. Thank you very much.
God bless you.